Good morning and welcome to the Pop-Up Garden Show. It's Wednesday morning and I'm Molly. Kitty's here too.
I am here.
Yeah. And we're here to talk about a variety of things this morning. One of the things I wanted to start with is some of the resources that are available that really are super local, because that's one of the beauties of, I think, the garden show, is because we garden here locally and our questions and topics are all about, you know, our exact area. And our listeners also help us learn and figure out what works here, because this is a place where gardening is a little different than other places based on our unique climate and also the resources that we have available and our soil types. So all of those things really weigh in to make for this to be an interesting and good place to garden.
Did you say rain?
I didn't mention. I said something about unique climate, I think.
Yes. That was some good. I know it doesn't seem like a particularly, it hasn't been very wet lately. But that the rain is really the, and the amount of rain is a dominant force for us. The other in terms of gardening, and the other one is that we don't tend to have super warm summers. So those are kind of the parameters that we need to work in. So it is really great that we have local references.
And we wanted to share with you a few of those right now. So we've had beautiful sunny weather to get in the garden. Maybe we're going to have a little bit of rain and you're going to be frustrated. So instead, we wanted to send you to have a chance to peruse some of the really local sources. So there are several. One is a small, I think it's called a chapbook. It's bigger than a brochure, but it's smaller than a tome. And it's called The Gardens of the Sitka Pioneers Home. It was written by Ann Jansen and published a while ago. I don't know if it's available at the library. It may be available at the Pioneers Home for sale. You could certainly find it in a used book source. And it's not a lot of how-to, but it certainly will give you lots of ideas about gardening in Sitka and the surrounding area.
And for that matter, you can walk around the Pioneer Home almost any time of year, and there's something going on in the garden. It's really a great resource for us for ideas.
A much more how-to, especially about growing vegetables, is a book that was a compilation of newspaper columns authored and self-published by Lori Adams. That book is available either from Lori, but if you don't know her, it's probably available from Old Harbor and from Garden Ventures. You can't find it on the web, most likely. It's a local resource on local things.
And it's very local.
And it's really great. Lori is one of our most productive gardeners in terms of really growing food. And then the other one is we have another very experienced and productive gardener who has been a guest on the garden show many times over the last 25 years. That's Florence Welsh. And she is another one who shares everything that she knows so graciously. And you can find a lot written and beautifully photographed and presented at her blog. It's called Sitkavores, sitkavores.blogspot.com. So Florence Welsh, and
It's a really great resource, and it has a lot about gardening. It also has some information about some gathering of some wild foods as well. I find that one super useful. A couple other places I wanted to mention, and these are Juno resources. And Juno is pretty similar to us. It's not exactly the same, but close enough. There is gardening in Southeast Alaska, which is produced by the Juno Garden Club, and I believe that it's on its third edition, so they've been revising and updating it. And that resource has also been super helpful.
And then the other one you can search through the archives and also find out what's going on up to date is the Sitka Local Foods Network, and they're online at sitkalocalfoodsnetwork.org.
And then one last one I wanted to mention from Juno is called Color in Rain Country, and it's all about growing flowers in Southeast Alaska. And that resource I believe it was published in 1981, and I'm pretty sure our library has a copy of it here in Sitka. So that's probably the best place to look for that.
And if you just want to dig in and glory in reading all about gardeners and writers about gardening and all sorts of resources. There are so many incredible books at Kettleson Library, mm-hmm. Sitka Public Library. It's there are shelves and shelves of them. So if you're looking for some specific project or tip, you're going to find a resource there. Or if you're just looking for inspiration, you'll probably find it there as well.
So I'm not really ready to quite stare at my books yet because there's still a lot of things I need to do. But I do like knowing about those resources. So if I get a question, I'm like, oh, now what was it that I was supposed to do with this particular thing? I go to one of those resources and check before I spin my wheels. But I'm still feeling like there's things I can do in my garden, even if the soils start getting a little soggier again. They've been super dry, it's super warm, and it's been really inspiring. As they get wet, there's still some other things. So I still haven't finished pruning my roses. So I need to get out there and prune. And I'm talking about the rugosa roses, the Sitka roses. Those are the ones that need to be pruned down so they don't quite take over the planet. And you can prune those pretty hard, actually. And again, the Pioneer Home's a great reference for that. You can see how far they prune theirs down. And they come up and they're beautiful later on. Theirs are controlled more for height and the way that rose hedge really looks. So you decide what you want yours to look like and prune accordingly.
And know that even though the leaf buds are popping out now, you can still go ahead and prune them. They will create more leaf buds. They're mm-hmm. so tough and vigorous that's not a problem.
I did have a question just a little bit ago about pruning rhododendrons and when to approach that. So it kind of depends. So if you're pruning out whole branches of a rhododendron, you can pretty much prune it now or whenever. I mean, if you don't like that particular branch there, or, you know, it seems a little ungainly, go ahead and prune it now. But if you are going to remove an entire branch and you will remove the flowers that are associated with that branch. So another way you could do it is let it bloom, see how it looks then, and then go back and prune. So I mean, the flowers are already, if they're going to be flowers on a particular part of the plant, they are already formed. They will be ready to pop pretty soon.
So I pruned one of my small leaf rhododendrons this weekend that is fairly low growing and spreads wide. And so it was spreading out and taking over my little erythroniums, and I didn't want that to happen. So I just clipped it back. So really, rhododendrons don't need pruning for the health of the rhododendron or to create more flowers or something like that. That's not the reason you prune a rhododendron. You prune a rhododendron so it suits you,
right,
the shape of it or the size of it.
Yeah, and I, like with most pruning, I kind of like, I'm pretty namsy-pamsy about pruning. I'll take out a little bit, and then I'll maybe, you know, the next day, maybe I'll take out a little more because I'd rather think about it. It's really darn hard to put that branch back on.
The officials tell you you should never prune more than a third,
yes,
of the branches off. But I'm here to tell you my husband will prove you wrong because when he gets a mind to prune a rhododendron, it is all gone.
Oh,
thankfully, those are some really tough rhododendrons that he has taken his snippers too, and they have come back. But I don't recommend that as a technique because you could easily, if it's not a really tough rhododendron, that could be the end of it.
The good news is rhododendrons are not hard to come by. You will have to pay for another one, but you could replace it if you make that fatal error. I did want to talk a little bit about planting bare root trees and shrubs because I know they're starting to appear in town. And actually, as the weather gets cloudier and wetter, this is actually a better time to be planting I think of them as being tender, those new plantings, because they need a lot of water. So they'll get less stress on their system if it's cloudy and kind of rainy. It may not be your ideal gardening weather, but it is going to be better for those particular plants. I think the best thing to do, the ideal thing in my mind, is to know where you're going to put that bare root item before you buy it, which is not always how I operate, but it is a good plan. Actually dig the spot for it. Get it all ready and think wider as opposed to deeper. You know, make it all ready, then go get the plant. And the other thing I like to do with those plants, maybe, is I'll, depending on how it looks, is I'll soak it overnight in water and really let it drink up a lot of liquid. That is, soak the roots overnight in water, and then I will plant it and give it a nice cover, and I'll water it pretty heavily. Even if it is raining, I will give it extra water to get things going.
Right. When you plant a bare root shrub or tree, in other words, we didn't really talk about what that means. It literally means it was shipped without any soil on it because it was completely dormant. It will need a chance to be watered. It will need to be watered for all season. So any time during the season, all summer long, when it's a dry stretch, if you water that plant, tree or shrub, whatever, you're going to be ahead of the game. It takes them a while.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, traditionally, it said stake them really heavily and prune them hard. And I don't recommend either of those. If you're planting it in a place where it's super windy and it's likely to tumble over, or on a slope where it's going to tumble over, sure, you can stake it for a little while. But we've sort of learned that we don't need to stake plants like we used to think we did. And then the hard pruning only means there's less branches and potentially less leaves to pull that water up and get going.
Right, and to supply nutrients. So that's always been like kind of the trade-off, is like people get concerned about having this large top that needs to be supported by these small roots. But it kind of goes back and forth. The roots... are the branches are doing a lot of the work. That is, the leaves that are on the branches are doing most of the work of that plant. They're photosynthesizing, they're doing all that work, sending nutrients down and pulling water up. So it's a balancing act.
So this is the Pop-Up Garden Show, and since that means it was planned late in the game, we do have something that we wanted to play for you.
Programming on KCAW is provided by First Bank, a local funding source for boat loans, home loans, and remodel projects with a home equity loan or line of credit. First Bank, the one who's here. Member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Thanks, Kitty. Yeah, so transplanting, I mean, bare root are an example of transplanting. There is another type of transplanting of tree and shrubs that can happen right now, and that's the ones that are shipped in soil.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at that soil, oftentimes it's clay.
Oh, it's awful.
Because clay holds water really well, and so it's an ideal media to ship the plant
right.
in. But the problem is, when you plant them into our really forest-based soils or whatever, good garden soils, you don't really need that big wad of clay under there. So it's almost better to wash all that clay off, kind of consider mm-hmm. it a bare root plant and take it
right,
from there.
Right, and start all over again. Yeah, no, I remember particularly one vine maple I got that was in just like this. It was a wad of clay. It was solid, and I soaked it off and cleared it off just to make sure that those roots were free and knew they were no longer in that essentially a clay pot.
Right.
That I'm sure the roots would have just kind of gone around in little circles in there before they went out. So I would remove that. So the other thing to remember to do is to pot up or transplant up your seedlings. So I have seedlings growing, and yesterday I was like, you're starting to hit the edge there. So I potted them up right away. And actually, I moved some of them out into the greenhouse, but I covered them. I don't have a heated greenhouse, so I potted them up, I watered them well, and I covered them up with some good old Rime. It has multiple uses, and that's to give them a little bit of an edge. They're going to get a little bit more full-spectrum lighting outside than they will, and it'll be a little bit brighter. Plus, that Rime will, so it'll shade them, the Rime, plus it will keep them warmer.
Right. So transplanting, you really don't want them to sense that they have limits to what they can grow, because it means they change their strategy and start getting ready to go into bloom
or
do something like that. So you really want them to stay in vigorous growth mode, and that means you have to pot them on if you started them in a really small soil volume.
Yeah, a lot of times I will just use those little tiny little pop-up Jiffy pots for my initial, because, well, if I've been holding the seeds for a long time, maybe the seeds aren't so good. So I don't want to invest a lot into the seed. But those are perfectly good spots to start things in, but I do need to move them on, because you can see the roots will start growing right out the side of the little peat pot. They're ready to go then, so try not to wait quite that long.
so much to do, whether it's indoors or outdoors. We welcome your questions and comments. Get a hold of us on Facebook or here at the station. Love to hear what you're interested in. We can't tell you when the next pop-up garden show is, so be on the lookout for promotion about that. But yeah,
it's kind of we apologize for what was referred to this morning to me as the stealth garden show. But I was like, well, it's the way it's going to have to work because of everyone's schedules. We still want to talk to you about gardens, but we're just never quite sure when that's going to be week to week. So we will join you at least once a week someday, we promise. So one last thing I was going to throw you out with just before we would go back and rejoin your regular morning program is that there are so many flowers out there blooming right now. If you don't have a lot of action going on in your garden, take a walk and look at other people's gardens and see what maybe you need to bring into yours. So for the Garden Show, I'm Kitty Labonte.
And I'm Molly Kabler. Have a great time in your garden.